Greetings and welcome in. It's Better's Last Stand, show number 137, coming to you from the Pine Room Watchdog Studios in downtown Reeling on a blistering hot day. It is absolutely horrible outside. I can't tell you how bad the last few days have been here in the area. Just all the more reason to never want to come here. To go along with our beautiful roadways, we have just horrendous weather right now. It is really, really horrible. So hopefully you're trying to stay safe and cool. I don't know if it's even possible, but give it your best because it is really, really awful out there. And being outside for very long at all is could be deadly. So be careful. Kind of about as bad as our picks last week. We were not pretty here on Better's Last Stand, but we're going to bounce back, go through a little bit of a rut here every once in a while. Maybe it's the heat. Maybe it's not. If you're sticking with single sports, and we're still doing all right in a few things, but overall, not a good week for us at all. We were down over 7.6 units to be exact, so just a touch under seven, or touch above 7.5, touch under 8. It was ugly for golf again. Jake Knapp, our lone bright spot, with the top 5 out of him again. AFL, we're back in the win column at least there. So if you're tailing the AFL's 11-7 last week, 104-76, 58% since early May. So those numbers not as good as we were a few weeks ago, but we're back in the win column after a couple of losing weeks in a row in the AFL. CFL 3-5 was not good there. Had some really bad luck there in those games. Not necessarily bad beats, but just bad decision-making by a few of the teams that we had and bad situations for us as far as game flow goes, which led to a couple of our bets not coming in. I feel like we probably could have been 5-3 instead of 3-5, but show goes on. NASCAR lost again. Just can't seem to get across the finish line very often in NASCAR. I think we've had one winner maybe this year. Yeah, Chase Elliott, I think. But Todd Gilliland, very good out of him. Very good out of Brad Keselowski. But we had cars in contention and then catastrophe. Just with these right rear tires blowing on two of the Penske guys that we had. And just really, really bad luck. Again, everybody has it. So that's the way it goes. IndyCar ran 6th, 7th, and 8th. So we cashed a few top 10s, but nothing better than that. F1, we did have Oscar Piastri, but as expected, he's plus 165. So he's a very short priced winner. We did have one other bet for F1 that cashed. So we were a small winner in F1. Soccer 2-2 on the week. Our futures absolutely fell apart. It was falling apart on these airways last week when we were watching Germany play in their semifinal game. They had the game won. They fell apart against Spain. Multiple chances to win the game right here while we were on the show, and it didn't turn out, and I told you that was going to cost us, and it did, and everything went against us after that. We were down 9.5 units in our futures. You know it was bad when we gave out the Julia Gwynn for Germany as our player of the tournament, and she blows out her MCL in the first match of the tournament. So it was never going to work for us there. I thought we had a shot. Germany was coming around, and then England just cheats death again and wins. I just can't get over it. We had Spain to win the final match, had Spain to win it all as a, you know, basically a hedge. Germany was our top play, but couldn't get any of them home. It was incredibly frustrating. England really did not look like a good team or a dominant team. But I'll give them credit. In the 80th minute and on, they outplayed everybody that they matched up against. And it worked in their favor, and they got it done. It was sickening. I hate England and pretty much everything, especially soccer. They act like they are the greatest soccer nation ever when they really haven't won a major tournament. These women's tournaments, really, there's only like three credible women's clubs in the world or clubs, countries in the world, maybe 5 to 6 really now. But England, don't pat yourself on the back too hard with that victory. We'll see the men fall apart again here in the World Cup next year anyway, like they always do. But England gets it done, and it did not work out well for us. Match-wise, though, we were pretty good, 33-18-3 overall, 61%. So take that from a match-to-match basis. It was just the futures that did not go well. Big three basketball, another decent week. I watched all these games. I got the way we're on Saturday this week, so I was able to watch them all. And it was really entertaining stuff. I got to tell you, this is a good league. And the people that get mad about this league, it takes a lot of hate. I don't understand why. Listen, you people that listen here and watch this show at the Pine Room Studios on YouTube, or listen here on The Watchdog, or listen wherever you get your podcasts, Amazon, Apple, Spotify, on and on and on. They know that I'll throw shade on just about anything if I think it's warranted, but I can't get over the disgust about this Big Three basketball. It's a good product. The crowds are good. The TV ratings are pretty good. It's growing each year. The player roster is good. I mean, you're getting a lot of good NBA, ex-NBA guys. And this is a lot better than watching them run up and down and just dunk. And it, you the only time you see dunks is, maybe an alley-oop or somebody rotates over and you throw an alley-oop. But that's within the, within the context of a basketball play, and if it was you were playing girls or small time basketball where kids couldn't dunk or whatever, you would see the same play. It just wouldn't get finished exactly. You would just see the pass and it would be a layup instead of a dunk. But it's great. It's really good. The execution, every person has to play in a 3-on-3. Somebody's got to be the screener. Somebody has to be the cutter. Someone's got to handle the ball on every single play. So you're getting every person involved. 5-on-5 basketball, you get a lot of standing around. That's why it lends itself to help defense. You get people sagging in the paint. That's why you get a bunch of three-pointers and you get one-on-one stuff where you don't move the ball. This doesn't have that. It just doesn't have that. Now, sometimes guys will gun or whatever, but I'm telling you, if you haven't given it a shot yet, turn it on. It's on CBS and Vice TV on the weekends live, and it's good. I'm telling you, it's good. I don't know why people dislike it so much. I don't know if people just don't like Ice Cube, but Ice Cube's an incredible businessman, very likable guy, and I don't know. I'm all in on the Big Three. If the Big Three was on like the NBA was on, it would be really, really popular. It should be a lot more popular. I think it's great. I think it's better. I think the coaching is pretty good. And I'm impressed with it. I'm not saying everything's perfect. Some of the guys are out of shape, and again, that hurts. But they got 5-man rosters now, which is nice. They used to have 4, so it's a good league. I give it a shot. I hope it continues to succeed. Big Three basketball. We were 5-3, 17-6 to start the year. 74%. I watched all these games, every single one of them, on Saturday. Soccer, as I recapped, England gets it done in the Euros. Pretty sickening way to lose there. Germany just absolutely kills us. Coming up on today's show, we're going to preview the Big 12 Conference. Yes, the Big 12, the Mountaineers. We'll talk Mountaineer football along with some of our other favorite bets in the Big 12 Conference, as well as the AFC and NFC South. I'm going to preview both of those divisions in the NFL. So here it is. We did a college preview last week of the ACC. Now we're on the Big 12 and the AFC and the NFC South. So NFL starting up tonight or tomorrow or whatever time you're listening to this, last night. Depends on when you're listening. The Hall of Fame game this week. And yeah, it's here. So we will look into divisions each and every week here on Bettors Last Stand, leading you up to the NFL opener, as well as week 0 and week 1 in college football. We will be bringing you a different conference to talk about each and every week. So we're going to talk about that. The last part of the show, we'll go through the bad beats, the industry news as always. Not a ton to talk about otherwise. We've got some plays in some of the sports that most of you don't care about, but probably should, because you can see my numbers in these sports are going to be a lot better than they're going to be in MLB baseball every single day. It's hard to beat, but we'll keep trying. MLB update, you got some trades going on. Key Brian Hayes was dealt today. You got the trade deadline coming up here in less than 24 hours. So teams making moves here. You had Sir Anthony Dominguez getting moved, Gregory Soto for the Orioles last couple of days. So a lot's happening here. We'll see what the Pirates do. Looks like the Pirates will move a bunch of players, including some of their back-end bullpen pieces, as they get a guy, a veteran reliever from the Reds, that I think they'll slot into one of their back-end bullpen spots. His contract's up at the end of the year, so either they're going to try to retain him cheaply or let him walk. But MLB-wise, it hasn't been pretty for our San Francisco Giants, as they're about to get swept by the Pirates today in an afternoon game. We'll see if that turns out that way. But the Giants, of the teams we've been touting here over the last few weeks, the Reds, the Giants, the Red Sox, and the Rangers, three of those four teams still pretty good, with a pretty good pulse. The Giants have been very streaky all year, so maybe they can turn it around, win like 8 or 9 in a row and be back in it. They're not completely out of it yet, and I think they'll make some moves, because the Giants will pay money. Their fans are the best in baseball. They will demand it. And the Giants will make moves. So I expect the Giants to be busy. I expect the Red Sox to be busy. And there's going to be a lot of sellers. You got Baltimore now, who's made a nice little run here. I think there will still be sellers. I think it makes a lot of sense. They just don't have the pitching to win anyway. So they might as well deal. And next year is pretty much a make-or-break year. I think if the Orioles are not a World Series contender next year, you clean house with literally every person that is in the entire organization, because the drafting, or you just make Elias be the draft guy only. He should just draft and develop, and he has absolutely no involvement in the big league roster, because they cannot seem to get a pitching staff that is going to carry them. So I expect them to be sellers. I think the Rangers will be buyers, and we'll see who else is a buyer here. Mets, Yankees, Cubs, Brewers. We'll see. Lots to talk about in the MLB. Next week, we'll have a pretty good idea. But I would get on those Texas Rangers futures. That number continues to drop, and drop some more. And I think the Red Sox are very, very live to win the American League East. Blue Jays team is not a great starting pitching team. They have a high ERA for their starters, and that's going to start to show its ugly head, which it has this weekend, or this week, early this week against Baltimore. So I'm not saying the Blue Jays are bad. I give them a lot of credit. They've overachieved, probably. Their lineup is okay. They need a bat, but they really need some starting pitching. They get a little bit of bullpen help yesterday with the trade happening in the same venue. Sir Anthony Dominguez walks down the hall and is in game two of a doubleheader against a team he was just traded from, so that's pretty interesting. But I think they're beatable. And the Yankees, as I've been telling you for weeks, and now Aaron Judge is on the IL. The Yankees are frauds. They're a one-man team, and he's on the injured list. Max Fried has come back to earth. They did have a big win the other night against Tampa, which Tampa let him off the hook. Tampa faltering, too. We talked about them. Boston's the best team in that division. They have been all year. They just haven't put all the pieces together. If they get a piece or two here at the deadline, I look for the Red Sox to really have a shot of tracking down the Blue Jays, making the playoffs. Texas Rangers, too. You're seeing both Seattle and Houston both in need of a few things. Houston just needs to get healthy. Seattle needs a couple other things to add. They're a little too slumpy for me. But we'll talk more about it next week here on Better's Last Stand, as the MLB trade deadline is on us, and we will unpack that next week. WNBA, Caitlin Clark still not back. Games have been trending to the overs here. I mean, these overs, I mean, you're seeing six-point moves on these things, and they're flying over. I feel like the totals from the odds makers a little low in all the games. Now, don't blindly play them, but if you were to blindly play overs over the last 3 weeks, and I forgot to track the number. I was going to do it, and I had a note to do it, and I forgot, so I don't have those. I'll get them next week, but the overs have been really, really good to you if you're an over player in the WNBA, as well as teams coming off of bad losses, meaning they're a favorite in the game, and they get beat, stunned outright. You have a lot of those scenarios occurring here in the WNBA. Playing back on the better team the following game has worked out quite well recently, in addition to the overs coming in. Big three, as I said, week eight, best bets. We'll get to those here in a second. 5-3 last week, 17-6 on the season. So, yeah, I guess with further ado, let's get right into it here and give you some picks here on Better's Last Stand, show number 137. Thanks for listening here on the Watchdog Network at the Pine Room Studios and wherever you may get your podcasts. NFL football is upon us, as the Hall of Fame game, Chargers and Lions. And Lions actually a two-point move on them. So by the time you listen to this, that game will be played. So I'm curious to see if the Lions will be the side there, with maybe some people starting to figure out what personnel will play. Let's get to it. Houston, Texas, the home for Week 8, the Toyota Center of Big 3 basketball. It'll be the Boston Ball Hogs and the Detroit Amplifiers. Detroit -2.5 the total, 94.5. Detroit's a team who's coming on. Jeremy Pargo was one of the best players in this league last year, and he's a little slow to start, but he was great last weekend. And this Cam Smith young kid, I really don't know why no NBA team is giving this guy more of a chance. Maybe they have. I just don't pay attention to that league. But this kid's pretty good. He gets it in the 3-on-3 context. George Gervin, the Iceman, is the coach here. I like Detroit -2.5 against Boston. Boston was not very good. I think Gary Payton is their coach. I didn't like the way they executed. I thought they were one of the more poorly coached teams. Gary Payton was getting really frustrated with his players. So I like this game under 94.5, and I like Detroit -2.5. Dallas Power at the home team for this round, the Houston Righands. It'll be Dallas -6.5, the total 92.5. Nancy Lieberman in Dallas, really well-coached team. They know how to play. They had a really nice win last week in a tight game. Greg Monroe, their best player, he was really good down the stretch. I'll take Dallas -6.5 over the 92.5 against Houston. Houston, not very good. The LA Riot and Dwight Howard against the DMV Trilogy. It'll be the Riot -4.5, total 93.5. Now, I noticed one thing last week. Dwight Howard is drawing attention for the wrong reason. He's still all right player in a half-court game, but their lines are faulty here for the Riot. They're not that good. Their guard play is very susceptible to a lot of these other teams with better guards. So I'm not a Riot guy at all. I think 4.5 years is ridiculous. DMV, as we talked about them, they had another tough loss last week, but they've played everybody close. Earl Clark, Will Barton. I mean, they're not bad. So I think DMV catching 4.5 here is a really, really good bet. Too dependent on Howard or the Riot. I'll take DMV plus the 4.5 and over 93.5. I think the Riot, they also struggle to guard the perimeter. So a lot of bad shooting last week. And if some of these teams make shots this week, the Riot could be in trouble. 305, that's Miami against the Chicago Triplets. It'll be Miami minus 2.5. Chicago is, well, they're catching 2.5. 94.5 is the total here. Dr. J leads Chicago. Miami 305 has Michael Beasley. They have Mario Chalmers. These guys are looking a little old to me. We had them last week. They got the job done, which is good, against, I believe, Houston, who's not a good opponent. Chicago, though, to me, Montrezl Harrell was an absolute beast. He seems to be in about the best game shape of any of the inside players in this league. Chicago rode him down the stretch. We were against him last week, and he was not going to be stopped down on the block. So I think it's going to be a tough matchup for Miami. I like the Chicago Triplets catching 2.5 here, led by Dr. J, and I like the under 94.5 there in the Big 3 basketball. Again, you can find all these plays at BLS_PRP on Twitter or X. Moving on to golf, it's the Wyndham Championship. Again, BLS_PRP if you want these things on Wednesday so you can get them ahead of time. These are the guys that we went through. We got a heavy football program here, so I got to get through these pretty quickly. Matt Fitzpatrick at 18-1. We're on Aaron Rye, who won this last year at 25-1. Hideki Matsuyama, 25-1. Good number on him in a bad field. Lucas Glover, 34-1. Everybody's on him this week, though. That would worry me a touch. He won here in 2023, maybe? Yeah, the recent winner here. Max Grayersman, he's been pretty good to us. 50-1 on him. I'll keep wanting to play Sung J.M., and he keeps disappointing me. I feel like if I don't play him, then I'll get burned. He's 55-1. That's crazy. Bud Colley at 60-1. Andrew Novak at 60-1. And then Victor Perez, 110-1. Ben Coles played really good last week at 171. And Ryo Hisanone, the Japanese guy, Hisatane, I think maybe sounds better. That sounds more Japanese than what I said at first. It probably sounded Italian. But Ryo at 110-1, he was tied for third here last year. So look at up for the Japanese guy, Ryo. Good player, been playing pretty well this year. So take a shot with him at the Wyndham Championship in Greensboro, North Carolina. This is not a big hitters course. So guys with good irons don't have to be long off the tee to have a shot there. Again, BLS_PRP will have all those plays there for you. All right, let's go through some bad beats and some other things going on before we get into our football. Tough week for people who grew up in the 80s, or, you know, if you were a teenager in the 80s or a middle schooler in the 80s, even a college kid in the 80s. Really hard one. Malcolm Jamal Warner. You have Ozzy Osbourne, Hulk Hogan, which really, really hurt. And then Ryan Sandberg, who I was not a huge fan of, but he was always on TV. Saw tons of Cubs games when you were a kid. You always had him on along with the Braves, so you knew everybody on the team. I was never a Ryan Sandberg fan, but a lot of people were, and just died way too soon. Just so condolences to all of them. You got a couple of massive sports heroes there in Hulk Hogan and Ryan Sandberg. So, yeah, it sucks to be getting old here as us people that grew up in the 80s are losing a lot of our heroes, and it's very sobering. Germany and Sweden in women's soccer both collapsing in late game situations. Sweden against England, Germany against Spain. Say no more. More incidents of gambling, improprieties here, malfeasance, whatever you want to call it. Another Cleveland Guardian pitcher implicated in the betting scandal. We don't know many details yet, but it's Emmanuel Clase, the closer, who could have been moved here at the trade deadline. We will not be seeing him move now, as he is on the non-disciplinary paid leave until the 31st. He joins Luis Ortiz in that probe of throwing intentional balls or balls outside on purpose to start innings, looking like there was some heavy bets on these pitchers coming out of innings. Really, really interesting stuff here, and we will get to the bottom of it at some point. But as I talked about on last week's show, regulation is so important here. You just don't catch this stuff without being regulated. So a lot of people are crushing the gambling industry, but it's actually all we're doing is exposing people who were up to no good to begin with. So that is the lesson to be learned. Oklahoma City Thunder, 25-26 season. They are 62.5 is their win total, if you can believe that. Highest since the 18-19 Warriors, also at 62.5. BetMGM reports that Syracuse is their top win totals bet of any college football team. So I don't know if that's good. We gave Syracuse out here last week. But the one thing I will say that makes me feel a little bit better is that's just not in ticket count. That is also in handle. So you're seeing some professionals on Syracuse as well in some big betting syndicates. So public and pros on the same team here. Sometimes that works. Sometimes it does not. We will see. Also from MGM. Got some big bets on Texas at 5-1, $200,000 at Texas at 5-1 to win it all. Penn State at 750 plus 750, $300,000 that was on Texas at 5-1, $200,000 on Penn State at 7 plus 750, and then $115,000 on Clemson at 13-1, all to win a college football playoff. So some big bets going on there. And you know what? Sportsbooks love that because only one of those teams is going to win that. And you're taking six figures on all three of those. So you're off to a pretty good start in your futures pool there for college football. Large bet on the Lions to win at MGM, $54,500 to win the Super Bowl, to win you back $545,000 at 10-1. Other notable bets, how about this one? $10,000 on the Pittsburgh Steelers at Hard Rock to win $400,000, also $60,000 on the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl at 9-1. That would pay out about $540,000. $250,000 on the Bills to win the AFC East at minus 250. That would win you back $100,000. I guess if you had a quarter of a million to just throw around, that's not terrible. Win $100,000 back seems like a formality, so long as Josh Allen doesn't get hurt. But as we know, the NFL, anything can happen, and things are very unpredictable. MLB MVP race. How about this? Cal Raleigh now minus 135 favorite after Aaron Judge goes on the injured list. Judge now plus 105 after being minus 650 last week and as high as minus 10,000 earlier in the year. Raleigh was 3-1 last week. So how about that turnaround? Paul Skeens, yet to allow a run in 22 starts in the first inning. Incredible stuff. So Pirate Nurfies, 19-3. So no run in the first innings. That means the Pirates scored a run three times in Skeens' start. Skeens has never allowed one in 22 starts. So keep that in mind post-trade deadline. Nick Kurtz, how about this? He's now minus 2,000 to be the AL Rookie of the Year after that 6-for-6 game. 8 RBIs, 4 home runs. Crazy, crazy game. Sinking our Jacob Wilson ticket, his teammate. I thought he had that locked up, and then this guy comes out and he's having one of the greatest games hitting wise in the history of humanity. So what are you gonna do? Rolling along here, Bettors Last Stand show number 137. We are going to preview the Big 12 conference as well as the AFC and NFC South divisions here on today's show. A couple of things to get to before that. Let's go to Canadian football here. Got the Calgary Stampeders and the Ottawa Renegades. So you got Calgary, whose quarterback is probably going to be out here. This game opened 5.5 down to 1.5. Vernon Adams probably out. Ottawa's lost 4 in a row. I mean, I still might take Calgary here, but if you're ever going to take Ottawa in a game, they're 1-6. This might be the one, like the under 51.5 there. Get that total before it is gone. Hamilton Tiger Cats at the Edmonton Elks. Hamilton's won 5 straight, playing well. A 4.5 point favorite on the road. Edmonton, they can score a little bit. I think they keep this game kind of close, but I'm going to lean Hamilton, probably win by about a touchdown and go over 54.5. Friday game, you have Toronto at Winnipeg. Toronto comes in 2-5, Winnipeg 3-3. Toronto just beat Winnipeg. Arbuckle playing decent at quarterback for Toronto. He seems to have Winnipeg's number. He's 3-0 against them in his last 3 starts. So it wasn't pretty, the game for Winnipeg. Zach Collaros goes out of the game injured. He did not look 100% at all. It looks like it's going to be an injury that could nag him for a while. So I'm not certain he'll even play in this game. Right now, Winnipeg minus 5. That could go down after they've lost 3 in a row. Collaros questionable there, like under 51 in that one. And I can't take Toronto, but you never know. Winnipeg desperate for a victory. Saskatchewan and Montreal on Saturday. The Alouettes catching 3 at home. They're 5-2. Saskatchewan has been a public team. People have really been getting on them. They're 6-1. They seem to be the team everybody thinks is the best team. Not certain. I like Montreal here. I'll take the 3. Saw some 3s in a hook out there too. So if you can get that, even better. And then we'll go over 49.5 in Canadian football. Switching over to Let's do Australian rules football before we get into NASCAR and finishing out the show with our Big 12 and AFC and NFC South previews. All right, so AFL, we were back in the win column. It is now round number 21. We have 4 weeks left. You have a few teams here in desperation to win to try to get into the finals, which is the playoffs. The top eight get in. Western Bulldogs is one of those teams. They will have played Thursday, so you might miss that. They're laying 15.5, total 178. Two of the last three went over between these two, but I like the under here. Tightly played game. GWS has some injuries. They've won six in a row. We had them last week in a nice win, but we'll take Western and under in that one. Friday, early morning, Hawthorne at the Adelaide Crows. Battle of the second place and fifth place team. It'll be Hawthorne catching 16.5 here, 165.5. I like the over here. Two of the last three have went over. Hawthorne's won 6 of 7. Adelaide has won 5 straight, and they are crushing teams at home. So we will take the Crows minus the 16.5 and over 165.5. West Coast at Melbourne. What a terrible game this is. The Melbourne Demons laying 41.5 after we faded them as a favorite last week, and they lost outright to St. Kilda. 171.5 is the total. West Coast, so bad, but they did cover last week. We did take them against Frio. They covered pretty comfortably, if you can believe it. Melbourne, as I said, they were so bad last week against St. Kilda. Last four between these two have went over, so we'll go over 174.5. And I'm going to take the West Coast Eagles again, the 1-18 West Coast Eagles, the cover of this 41.5-point spread. Richmond and Gold Coast. Richmond's winning is probably over. Gold Coast lays 50.5 at home. 167 is the total. Richmond's two-game win streak ended last week against Collingwood, which would be expected. Gold Coast really needs this. They're the last team in at 12-6. They're in the eighth spot. They've won 4 out of 5. They're good, not great. I don't think Gold Coast can win anything here. They can win this game, but I don't think they can actually make a deep run in the playoffs. But they're not bad. They've had a good season. Essendon and Sydney. Sydney Swans minus 46.5. We had to get off the Swans last week. They got beat by GWS bad, but they should be able to win this game. Essendon is just an atrocity, and Sydney has to win this game to have any shot at the finals. Laying 46.5, and we'll go over the 149.5. Now, I'm a little bit leery there as there is some weather over on the east coast of Australia. So you could see some wind and some rain for this matchup, but I still think the Swans at home will be able to score probably about 125 points in this game, maybe themselves, and that should easily get the game over despite Essendon being awful on offense and awful all the way around. Game of the week, Brisbane at Collingwood, and a big rivalry match here. It'll be Collingwood minus 7.5. They are the top team. Brisbane number 3 in the table. Brisbane got caught looking ahead last week. They definitely didn't take Gold Coast seriously. The total 165.5 here. I think this is a very tightly contested game. I'll take the Brisbane Lions. They are my pick to win the entire thing. Take them plus 7.5. 165.5 will go under there. I think Brisbane will be very focused on this match and come to play against Collingwood in a rivalry match. North Melbourne and St. Kilda, two teams out of the playoffs. St. Kilda minus 25.5. Total 175.5. St. Kilda, we played them money line and plus the points last week. They won for us. I don't think they can do that again. I don't think they can cover. They might be able to win this game, but I'll take the Kangaroos. 175.5 will go under as well. I can't expect St. Kilda to cover 25.5 against anybody. And then the Port Adelaide Power, absolutely decimated by injuries. They've been eliminated from the finals contention. They take on the Geelong Cats at 13-6, and Geelong right now is starting to come into form at the right time. Will their defense be good enough? I don't know. But the last four games for them, they've scored over 100 points. They have really, really been incredible. And I think that Geelong is probably going to win this game by 75 to 100 points. I mean, you have some of the best players on Port Adelaide out of this match, and they have now been eliminated, so they really have nothing to play for here. I think Geelong absolutely buries the Power. Sam Powell Pepper out, Jason Horn Francis, among many others. I think they had 13 guys on the injury report with season-ending injuries, so Port Adelaide not getting any help for the remainder of this season. So we go to the Cats minus 48.5 and over 176.5. Carlton and Fremantle. Fremantle minus 31.5 here, total 158.5. Fremantle has won 9 out of 10. They're in the finals right now. I don't think they'll fall out. Their schedule has really come at the right time. They do have a couple wins against some good teams, though. So I'm not a believer in Frio at 13-6, but they're beating all the teams that they should. And Carlton, They've won the last three against Frio, if you can believe that, but they are out of the playoffs and will not be playing finals football. Last six between these two, under. So we'll go Frio and we'll go under the 158.5 in the final game of the week. Let's see. I think that's the wrap-up for AFL week number 21. And then finally, let's get over to racing here on Better's Last Stand, show number 137, before we spend the last half hour or so talking about the NFL and college football, which is everybody wants to talk about here in the Ohio Valley as we get closer to football season. All right. So it was the Firestone Grand Prix of Monterey last week. We had three drivers. We finished 6th, 7th, and 8th in IndyCar with Scott Dixon 6th, Will Power 7th, and Pato O'Ward finishing 8th. Alex Palou wins again. Yeah, I get tired of saying that. They are off this week for the IndyCars. They will next be in Portland a week from this Sunday. Staying with the open wheels, it was Lando Norris coming up a little bit short. Oscar Piastri got the job done for us last week at plus 165. We will be taking Oscar again this week. He, to me, superior driver. His pass of Lando Norris early in that race was something to behold. Just dominated. And then there were some tire issues, so you didn't know if he was going to be able to hang on or not. And he did a great job conserving and holding on, holding off his teammate, drawing away, really, and dominating. Top six finish. I think Kimi Antonelli's had a rough few weeks, but I feel like his car should be decent here in the Hungarian Grand Prix. And I think I'll take a shot with him at minus 120. I actually saw an even money on him, too, so maybe get that before it goes to a minus price. Top 10 finish, Fernando Alonso. So the Aston Martins have performed pretty decent here at Hungary over the last few years. You had a double top 10 for them back in 2023, and then a top 10 last year for Fernando Alonso with Lance Stroll finishing 11th, so almost a double top 10 again. So right now, Alonso minus 135 to finish in the top 10, and you have Lance Stroll at plus 450 to finish in the top 10, which isn't a terrible bet. So I think the Aston Martins have a shot here at a double top 10. That's 10 to 1. So take a peek there. We'll see how they qualify. If they're way, way back, then probably not. But if they qualify in the low double digits or the high single digits, I think they have a very good shot. So we will see. Oscar Piastri, the defending champ here at Mogyaród, I believe is how you say it. Mogyaród, Hungary, whatever it is. I'm usually pretty good at that stuff, but I do not know how to say that name. 45 laps led for Piastri last year as McLaren went 1-2. Lando Norris did lead 18. Max Verstappen was the winner 2 years ago. He led all 70 laps in this race. Mercedes and Ferrari, nothing that I saw out of them last week would lead me to think that they're trending in the right direction to be able to run down these McLarens. So it looks like a McLaren all the way. Again, we'll take a small play on Antonelli and a good position on the Aston Martins to be in the top 10 in Formula One. And then we go to the NASCAR, the stock cars. Bubba Wallace gets it done. Yeah, Bubba Wallace, you don't ever hear us give him out very often. Didn't see that one coming, but he did drive very well late. Kyle Larson second, Denny Hamlin, Ryan Preece, Brad Keselowski, Todd Gilliland. We gave you Keselowski and Gilliland here on the show. But a lot of our other guys had just poor outings, just actually bad finishes. Austin Dillon, terrible ending. Wasn't terrible all day. Joey Logano, same thing. Probably had the best car in the race. Tire flats, and he smashes it up and finishes 30 seconds. So not good for us in NASCAR, but we'll be back at it, back to the drawing board here in Iowa. They've only ran once here in Iowa. And one thing about NASCAR is if you can find tracks that are similar to the other tracks, especially ones with low data points, like there's not a lot of data on this, and that would be Kansas, or Iowa, I'm sorry, which compares to Kansas, Richmond, New Hampshire, Phoenix. Those are your closest comparisons to Iowa. So you go Iowa, a 0.875, I believe, is the distance on Iowa, so not quite a mile. So it's not a short track. It's a little shorter, but it's not a super speedway or intermediate. Little shorter than Dover, little longer than Richmond. So yeah, make your comparison. So Richmond, Kansas, Phoenix, and New Hampshire. They haven't ran at Richmond yet this year. We haven't ran at New Hampshire yet this year. We have run at Kansas and Phoenix. So listen to these. So the last race at Iowa, which was won by, I believe, Ryan Blaney. Yeah, our only race at Iowa. It was Ryan Blaney, William Byron, Chase Elliott, Chris Bell, Ricky Stenhouse, Joey Logano, Josh Berry, Alex Bowman, Daniel Suarez, Brad Keselowski were the top 10. Now listen to our results from Kansas earlier this year. And in that race last year at Iowa, Ryan Blaney led 201 laps. So that's domination. I mean, that's a lot of laps led. I'm trying to see how many laps were actually run in this race. 350. So he led well over half of those. You had Kyle Larson lead 80, and you had Josh Berry lead 32. So you heard those names, Blaney, Byron, Elliott, Bell, Stenhouse, Logano, Barry, Bowman, Suarez, Keselowski. Kansas earlier this year, and Kyle Larson actually had bad luck. So he led 80 laps here, finished second to last after a crash. So Larson wins with 221 laps led. Chris Bell second. Ryan Blaney, who won the race at Iowa, third. Chase Briscoe was not in their aforementioned list. Alex Bowman was. Josh Berry was. Ryan Preece, Chris Buescher, Joey Logano was. Then you had Nemechek 10th. Chase Elliott and William Byron both had very good cars at Kansas. Both suffered unlucky misfortune, whether it was in the pits or in accidents. So keep an eye on those two names. Then you go to Phoenix earlier this year. Chris Bell leads 105 laps and wins the race. Denny Hamlin second. Kyle Larson, who we saw at Kansas, dominate and had a really good car at Iowa last year before having problems. Josh Berry again in the top five. Chris Buescher, who ran very well at Kansas. William Byron, who's run both well at Iowa and Kansas that we just mentioned. Alex Bowman, we've mentioned in all three of these races. Then you got Kyle Busch, Zane Smith, Chase Elliott pops back up again. Joey Logano pops back up again. He had a very good car but got in an accident. And then Ryan Blaney, who won this race last year, pops back up at the Phoenix results with a very strong car and a driver rating, but had bad accident or bad luck late in the race. So what that tells you is one of those guys is probably going to have a very good shot. Chris Bell, 4-1, too cheap to take. I can't recommend that. William Byron, I would take a shot with it, 8-1. Kyle Larson is one of your favorites, too. He's 5-1. Ryan Blaney, 4.5-1. Can't quite get there with those guys. But William Byron, who we talked about on those lists, Chase Elliott, who we talked about on those lists, at 10-1, definitely worth the play. Alex Bowman, 50-1. Top 5, 10 car in all three of those tracks we talked about. He'll be a use for sure. Joey Logano at 14-1. Chris Buescher, 22-1. Brad Keselowski, 30-1. And Josh Berry. Pretty low price here for Josh Berry. We'll see if it stays. 16-1. You might be able to hunt around and find something closer to 17, 18, 19-1 on Josh Berry. Because he's not one of your regular week in, week out type drivers. But those are the guys I'm targeting this week at Iowa with the serious comparisons to Kansas and Phoenix earlier this year. And if you want to go back even further, Richmond, New Hampshire, and look at some track data there to try to compare, as this is only the second time the Cup guys have been to Iowa Speedway. All right, Bettors Last Dance Show number 137 rolling on here from the Pine Room Watchdog Studios in downtown Wheeling on a ridiculously hot midweek day here. We're getting you ready for some football action. I know that's what everybody wants to talk about. Lots of things happening here on the Watchdog, so it's getting close to that time of year with football. And you see, you start to see the previews popping up everywhere. You're starting to see game lines coming out for all these games, and you're hearing people talk about it each and everywhere you tune in. So we'll have plenty more talk here on the regular Pine Room show each and every Tuesday and Friday, so tune into those, 12 to 3. Bear and Bob will be talking about it all off and on through when the good old boys returns in full swing. So plenty of football talk here on the Watchdog. You also have Wheeling Center and Wheeling Park and John Marshall football right around the corner here from a high school perspective. So lots happening here at the Watchdog and here at the Pine Room Studio. So let's get into it. Bettors Last Stand Show number 137. Down week last week, 7.6 units to the negative. But that's okay. We're going to try to battle back. Let's start it off in college football with the Big 12. Arizona State is your co-favorite, along with Kansas State, to win this conference at most spots. Consensus-wise, you find them between 5 and 6 to 1, plus 550-ish, both K-State and Arizona State. You got Texas Tech at 6 to 1, Utah at 6 to 1, Baylor at 6.5 to 1, TCU, Iowa State, Kansas, BYU. They're all in the teens to low double digits there. You saw Iowa State around 11-1. BYU gets up to about 18 or 20. Then you got Colorado, Cincinnati, Houston in that 25 to 30 range. Arizona, UCF around 50, along with Oklahoma State and the Mountaineers. Let's just go through the teams by teams here quickly. K-State, as I said, they're one of the co-favorites to win this conference this year. Are they that good? I don't really know. It's hard with all these new players coming in. You just don't know. Avery Johnson is back at quarterback for Chris Klieman, who is the coach. He's 48-28 overall there, so a very good record. Defense returned 6 for the Wildcats. They are already -3 against Iowa State in Dublin. I like the under in that game. I think that could be a very good play. I think K-State probably have a pretty decent defense. I am not a Matt Campbell fan for Iowa State, so I feel like their offenses always take a while to get going. So I like the under 49.5 in that game right out of the chute. I think they probably win K-State. This is seven games I thought were very winnable for them. Now, there are some coin flip games, but I thought seven wins for sure. So their win total of 8.5, a touch high to me. They got to go to Kansas, Baylor, and Utah. So that's a little bit tricky. I don't have a play on Kansas State. I think they could be decent. I think they could also disappoint a little bit. So I'm not one of the people that are in love with Avery Johnson saying he's a Heisman candidate. I don't see it like that. I think they're a decent team. I think they'll be okay. Will they be dynamic? Will they be last year's Arizona State? I can't say for sure. Arizona State, Kenny Dillingham, third year, 14-11. Obviously, they made the playoffs last year. Very, very exciting team. Sam Levitt, the quarterback, is back, but they do lose Cam Scataboo. That's everybody's favorite running back last year. He is now with the Giants. Top two wide receivers are back for Levitt, though. That has to be good. 17 players back who had 200-plus snaps on defense. So that, too, a good sign. I was going to be a little bit down on Arizona State until I saw what they actually have coming back. And they're a little bit better than I thought on paper. So I thought eight sure wins for them going through their schedule. Baylor, Utah, and Iowa State. They don't play Kansas State. They do. Those were trips, not sure wins. But trips to Baylor, Utah, and Iowa State. Now, that's difficult. They do not play Kansas State, which is a break for them. I say they're most likely to go over their 8.5. I think right around 9, but they might not be quite as good as they were last year. So no real official play. I lean to the over for Arizona State, and you can find them at 550, plus 550 to win the league. Texas Tech, Joey McGuire, the coach here, fourth year, 23-16. Lots of transfers coming in, led by running back Quentin Joyner coming from USC, averaged nearly 8 yards per rush last year. The Raiders also return Baron Morton, the quarterback, who was not very good last year, if I recall, and his stats would agree with that. The defense improved 50 spots, though, from 2023. So defense trending in the right direction, expected to be the strength of the team once again this year. I had 9 wins as the most likely amount for them. Their win total 9.5. They do have some difficult games, though. They're at Utah, at Arizona State, and at Kansas State. So the three best teams on paper preseason, they got to go to all three of them. So that could work against Texas Tech a little bit. Again, I think they win 9 games, but I can't take them over their win total. It's just, it's too much of a margin for error. So I will pass on the on Texas Tech as well. Moving on to BYU. Three-way battle at quarterback is never a good sign. The defense was solid. They bring back some additional transfers as well. I looked through their schedule. I thought 5 wins for sure for BYU, and that's kind of an issue because their win total is, I believe, 6.5. So, yeah, so you got to get at least 2 more. They have tough trips. Early in the year, they got to go to East Carolina, who's expected to be a lot better, and I think East Carolina always a difficult place to play. I would not count that as a sure win for BYU. They also take on Texas Tech on the road, Cincinnati on the road, Iowa State and Arizona. Arizona, decent at home. Iowa State, tough place to play. Cincinnati, tough place to play. Texas Tech, going to be one of the better teams in this league. So I lean under, but it's hard to project with a team like BYU. You just don't know we're going to get a quarterback, but I would stay away from them. I would not be betting them over, that's for sure. With the three-way quarterback battle, that usually doesn't turn out well. Utah Utes, they have perplexed me over the last few years. We did have them under a few years ago. We were not one of the people that were buying into them as a national championship contender. Last year, I was a little closer to that. I thought they would win the league and make the playoff. That did not happen. They started out 4-0 and fell apart. The Cam Rising thing was so frustrating, whether he would play, whether he wouldn't, whether he was coming back, all that crap. Move on now. They get a new OC. Jason Beck comes in from New Mexico and brings their good quarterback, Devin Dampier, with him, along with 4 running backs from New Mexico and 6 wide receivers. So an influx of talent coming to Utah on the offensive side of the ball. Only 10 players who saw time last year for the Utes, though, on defense are back. Usually Kyle Whittingham teams tough on defense and good on both sides of the line. So I think they're going to win at least 8 games. 3 of their 4 toughest games come at home, though, with the only really tough one at Baylor among the top teams. I'm going to go over again with the Utes, over 7.5. I think they should win at least 8 games. I don't love this play, but I got to keep going back to the well with them. At one point, I got to figure this team out. Iowa State, our next team, Matt Campbell, 64-51 overall in his career there. Don't love this team. The defense loses their top three linemen in their entire secondary. Their top six defensive backs all gone. Rocco Becht is the quarterback. He and Carson Hansen, who is the running back, are going to kind of lead the team. They have that Abu Sama as well in the backfield, who was pretty good for him last year. And they do have a very experienced offensive line. So those are some of the good things. I have them winning about six games looking at their schedule. They do have they got to play Iowa at home. So that's going to be a good game. Iowa getting a lot of talk that they're going to be very good. We'll talk about them when we get the Big Ten. But people are saying Iowa's the real deal this year. No games with Utah, Arizona State, or Texas Tech. So that's a big, big help to Iowa State. So I'm not going to give an official play here on Iowa State, because I just don't love Matt Campbell, and I think they could win seven. Their total is 7.5, and I think they will probably win at least six, as I said, but I have six for sure wins, and then I think maybe 7 or 8, you get a couple coin flips in there, but I can't trust them enough to go over 7.5. If you're going to get to 7 or 8 wins, they got to be able to beat Iowa at Cincinnati, Arizona State at home, or at TCU. They got to win two of those four games, and I'm not confident they can do it, so I'll stay away. The Baylor Bears, another team who has really hurt us the last few years. We were not on them last year. 2 years ago, we were. We picked them to win the league. We'll go back on them here to win the league. Sawyer Robertson is back at quarterback for the Bears. They had a bounce-back season over Dave Aranda, who's 31-30 now. He couldn't do it when our cousin Jake was there, could he? But Aranda's got it turned around. Their top two running backs are back, who accounted for 18 touchdowns last year. Robertson had the best passer rating in the entire Big 12 last year. So they got us two wide receivers are back. They do have a lot of transfers coming in on defense. So how their defense will be, I don't know. I would say they win at least 8 games. They do have a tough second week. They play Auburn. I don't know how good Auburn will be, but it's an SEC, caliber team. It'll be decent. They're at SMU. They get Arizona State, Utah, Kansas State at home. But they do have tricky games at Cincinnati and TCU, which they should just be better than both of those teams. So I'm going over 7.5 here with Baylor. I think they could be a contender to win the league if their defense is even average. I think this is an over team. Look for Baylor. There were a lot of points in the Baylor game. They got a lot of continuity on offense. So I think the Bears are going to be very, very tough to slow down. Can they slow anybody else down? Kansas Jayhawks coach and Nick's team, Lance Leipold, 22-28 overall. Somehow, some way, Jalen Daniels is back at quarterback here. I have no idea. It seems like he's played like 8 or 9 years. He's thrown for over 6,700 yards in his career so far. He's got his third offensive coordinator in 3 years. The defense also has a new defensive coordinator. And they only returned 5 players who played 200 snaps or more for the Jayhawks last year. So maybe a little bit of a concern there. This is a team that just doesn't seem like they're going to get over the hump. It's like they've gotten a little worse each year since Leipold's been there. They started out very good with him. Everybody had really high hopes, and they've kind of disappointed, to be quite honest with you. I'm not overly impressed with Kansas at all. I only saw 3 or 4 wins on their schedule for sure. So I thought the very, very highest they could get was 6 or 7. So I will be going under 7.5 here. I could not find easy wins. They don't have to play Arizona State, so that helps them. But I like under 7.5 for the Kansas Jayhawks. Arizona, this is a team who was decent at home last year, but really not very good. Noah Fifita, the quarterback, is back. He has 43 touchdown passes over the last 2 years. Defense was really bad. Doesn't look like it'll be much better. 4 or 5 wins, I think, and I can't recommend a play on the Arizona Wildcats. Colorado Buffaloes in Coach Prime. Liberty transfer Caden Salter takes over at quarterback for them. They got a lot of other high-profile transfers on offense. Can they replace Shador and that productivity? But their defense was so bad, and they had offensive line issues. The defense, actually, I will say defense did improve. It came up about 50 spots from the first year. So they are a little bit better. Schedule was tough. I have no play on Colorado. But I will say the steam on them, like we've had the last few years, is not there. We've taken very few future bets on Colorado. I think people finally realized it's a lot harder than it seems to just turn a program around very quickly. Mike Gundy in Oklahoma State, his 21st year, 169-88 overall. He is not one of the top teams in this conference anymore, and it's very strange. They're one of the longest shots on the board at over 50-1. He brings in Todd Grantham to run the defense, but his entire offense will be new, which is probably a good thing because it was really, really bad last year. What was that quarterback? Allen, Oh, I can't remember. Say would be yelling it at the radio. Alan Bowman, maybe? He was so bad. I feel like somebody ought to investigate him. He might have had money on the other team a few times last year. They could improve as the season goes on. I think Gundy tends to get more out of his team as the year goes on. Hopefully, they don't start out too poorly. Schedule's not easy. I have no play on Oklahoma State. Houston with Willie Fritz, 4-8 overall last year. Transfer Connor Wegman from Texas A&M takes over. He was one of the top 30 recruits in all the nation, like of all positions a few years ago. Defense returns 13 players who played over 200 snaps last year. So a few things to like, but a lot of people liking this team, which concerns me. Lots of steam on them because Willie Fritz has performed very well in the second season at all of his stops, including most recently at Tulane. Could win 5 or 6 based on their schedule alone, but I have no play. 6.5 might be a touch too high for their win total, so I will be passing on the Houston Cougars. UCF Golden Knights, Scott Frost is back. They return one player on offense, tackle Paul Rubelt. Their big left tackle is the only guy back. 17 new transfers coming in on the offensive side of the ball. Some talent on defense as well. Alex Grinch takes over the DC job from Washington State is where he comes in from. They're expected to have a very, very good pass rush, so that's one good thing. Offense could be explosive with Tavon Jackson coming in from Indiana. He didn't do a whole lot in Indiana. It was okay. Dual threat, decent. Probably an upgrade for them. Anything's better than what Gus Malzahn had going on there. They have some winnable games at home, and it's a tough place to play. But I can't see him traveling very well in this league, especially when it gets cold, so no play on UCF. Cincinnati, Scott Satterfield, 8-16 overall in his third year. This has been an underachieving team. Quarterback Brennan Soresby is back, but their offense has not been very good. I've always said Cincinnati, they were a team we had over last year, and they didn't get it done. We missed by half a game. We just needed one more win. They let a lot of games get away from them, even at home. So they got a good front six on defense, but their secondary is all new and could be bad. Schedule isn't easy either. I got to go under 6.5 here for Cincinnati. I think it'll be very similar year to last year, 5-6 wins for them. And then the Mountaineers, rounded it out. You can hear all the Mountaineer games right here on the Watchdog Network, watchdognetwork.com. Rich Rodriguez is back. This will be his 8th total year at West Virginia, his first one back since taking a long hiatus. 60-26 is how he started off his Mountaineer career. 52 transfers coming in from Rich Rod. A lot of these coming from small schools, so probably good players from very small schools. Jalen Knighton highlights that class of transfers. He's a running back from SMU. He was in the playoffs last year. He goes along with Jaheim White. Could be a pretty good backfield as White returns for the Mountaineers. So I think their offense running the ball is going to have to be the strength of the team. You got Jalen Henderson from Texas A&M. You got Nico Marquiole, the quarterback who played a lot last year. Will he be the starter? I don't know. Now they're talking about Max Brown, a transfer in from Charlotte. So a three-way battle at quarterback. Nico Marquiole is supposedly the front runner, but I don't know. Rich Rod really doesn't have any allegiance to him, so you could see somebody new there. Zach Alley comes in to coach the defense from Oklahoma. They consider that a massive upgrade to the Mountaineer defense, but I don't know. Do they have enough players? They don't have to play Kansas State, so that is good. But they have trips to Arizona State and Houston. Houston could be tricky. As we said, they don't get Baylor. So that's all right. Actually, they do get Baylor. They don't get Arizona State. They don't get Kansas State. Let me go through this again. They don't have to play Kansas State. Sorry, I'm confusing myself. So that is good. But they have trips to Arizona State and Houston, which should be difficult. They get Baylor, Utah, Pitt, and Texas Tech all at home. You've heard what I think about Pitt. High on them. I think they'll go in and beat the Mountaineers. I think it's going to take this team a while to get good. But so much unknown. I'm going under 5.5, as I said last week. And I am on the Baylor Bears to win this league. Kind of a hunch play. You can find them around 650, 7-1. I think what they got coming back, and I trust Aranda, Utah will be my second choice there at plus $6. So one of those two teams, I think, is the champion of the Big 12 come I guess it'll be in December. So that's how it breaks down. Big 12 wise, again, I will have all these posted at BLS_PRP. You can see all my picks for all the conferences. You can check them out on Twitter or X if you want to tail them, follow them, whatever, fade them, whatever it is you want to do as we roll on here. Show number 137, Better's Last Stand here on the Watchdog Network in the Pine Room Studios. Follow us at the Pine Room Studios on the social media avenues. You got your choice. anywhere you want to follow us at the Pine Room Studios. And then BLS underscore PRP can follow us on X with all the picks there. All right, so let's start it off in the AFC South. Our first NFL division preview this year. You got the Houston Texans. You got the Indianapolis Colts, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the Tennessee Titans. Those are the teams we will talk about. We'll start with Houston. Houston, their win total is 9.5. They're 35-1 to win the Super Bowl, 17-1 to win the AFC, and plus 115 to win this AFC South division. I didn't love this team. I think they're good. I think they're well coached. I think DeMeco Ryans does a good job. I don't love their roster. I think their defense is very good. Their offense obviously has some injuries, which could be key to them. I have question marks. Is C.J. Stroud going to bounce back? I think he's good. I don't know if he's great now. I thought he was going to be great, but last year, I don't know. New offensive coordinator, Bobby Slovic, is out. Boy, a few years ago, he was anointed as being the next big thing. Laremy Tunstall traded to the Redskins, so that could be a problem. They do bring in a couple of new offensive linemen that they like. Joe Mixon, who's suffering some sort of injury setback. I'm not a buyer on him. I think his wear and tear is starting to get up there to where guys start to fade. I think their defense is the clear strength of the team. They have Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson, incredibly good pass rushers. Derek Stingley and Kamari Lassiter in the secondary. I mean, so great, great defense. I think there could be a lot of unders in the future here. I went through their schedule. I thought 7 or 8 wins was where I had them. So I'm going under 9.5 here with Houston. I don't love them. I think they're a fringe playoff team, but I don't love them. And I like Joe Mixon's total. I saw under 1,050 yards and under 955 yards. I'll go under both of those. And they got Nick Chubb added to their backfield. I think Mixon's days of being like an every down back are over. I think you'll see him in the passing game a little bit more, but not as much in the running attack. I think you'll see a lot more Nick Chubb. So we're going Houston under the 9.5. We're going Mixon under his rush yards for the season. Moving on to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The team has burned us. I had them going to the AFC Championship last year, and they were absolutely abysmal. 4-13, 10-7 ATS. Liam Cohen takes over. This guy's a little different, so I don't know where you're going to get here. I'm hopeful that he'll be an improvement, but I'm not so sure. Win total 7.5. 80-1 to win the Super Bowl. 35-1 to win the AFC. 260 to win the AFC South. If I had to make a pick right now in this division, it would be Jacksonville. I lean that way. I don't have a great feel on any of this to win this division, any of these teams to win the division. But I do say, going through their team and their roster, I still think Trevor Lawrence is good. They get Travis Hunter, who can play on offense and defense. We'll see. Their defense was horrible last year, so I think it'll be a little bit better. I thought line-wise, they got Josh Allen, the pass rusher, who's very, very good. Secondary is still a big question mark to me. Can it perform better than we saw last year? I'm going to take a shot that it does. I'm going to go over 7.5 with Jacksonville. I think they win 8 or 9 games. I don't love it. Brian Thomas, we gave him out to lead the league in receiving yards. We're going to take a shot with that. We're going to go over 1,150.5 receiving yards for Brian Thomas, who I'm a big fan of. I think he's very, very good. And I think Trevor Lawrence might have his best year ever, but we shall see. Indianapolis Colts, the next team to talk about. 7.5 is their posted win total. 120-1 to win the Super Bowl, 50-1 to win the AFC, plus 380 to win the AFC South. I don't understand this total number of 7.5. You have a team who's going to have Anthony Richardson, who we told you is absolutely abysmal. He's a great athlete. He'll make one great play. He'll have one week where he'll look great, and then 4 straight weeks where he's terrible. You can't trust a guy like that. He's not going to be a winning quarterback. And then they got Daniel Jones. Okay, they're going to start him. He hasn't done anything in his career either. Is he better than Richardson? Absolutely. If they start Daniel Jones, they'll have a shot of winning 6 or 7 games. But I can only see 5 to 6 wins tops for this team. Jonathan Taylor, obviously a very good player. Secondary needs to improve. It was not very good last year. Defensive line, they got DeForest Buckner, but I don't know. He might be about finished. I don't love this team. Shane Steichen, I'm not blown away by him either. I'm under 7.5 here on the Colts. I think they're not going to be very good. If they play Daniel Jones, I think they'll stay in games. But if Anthony Richardson's there, expect to see him play great one week and terrible for 5 straight after that. I just have no faith that any NFL team can win with a quarterback like him. Tennessee, the next team. It was Cam Ward's team now. The University of Miami product is now the man in Tennessee. We'll see how this turns out. I think maybe I'm a little high on Tennessee. They might be a little better than people think. 5.5 is the win total. 200-1 to win the Super Bowl. 80-1 to win the AFC. Plus 650 to win the AFC South. Could they win that division? I guess I could make a strong case that all three of those other teams we just talked about are going to not be very good. And maybe Tennessee would be like the Redskins this year. But I looked through their schedule. I thought 5 wins was doable. I thought even 6 wins was doable. Lean to the over there, but no real play. I think they'll be better. They got Calvin Ridley. If he can develop chemistry with Cam Ward, I think they'll be all right. Defensively, I don't know. Offensive line gets a little bit of an upgrade. But the defense gave up almost 30 points a game last year. They do have Jeff Simmons and Tavondre Sweat, so maybe they can rush the passer, but I don't love it. Steve Mackinnon's trends from VEASAN, he has this team trending to win at least 6.5 to 7 games, so they're kind of a surprise team from some people on that side of things. But I would say if I had to make a play, I would play them over their 5.5, but I don't love it. You just don't know how quickly a rookie quarterback's going to come along. Rolling along, Bettors Last Stand, show number 137. Now time to talk about the NFC South. Recapping the AFC South, we will go with the Jacksonville Jaguars to win the division at plus 260. Brian Thomas's receiving yards over. Joe Mixon's receiving yards under. Houston Texans under 9.5 wins. The Indianapolis Colts under 7.5 wins. No play on Tennessee. And then over for the Jacksonville Jaguars of 7.5. NFC South time. You got the Falcons. You got the Panthers. You got the Saints. You got the Buccaneers. So the Buccaneers would be the team that most people think are the legitimate favorites here, and they are. But Tristan Wirfs is going to be out for at least the first 4 games. That's a big, big, big loss. And they got a couple games in there that maybe they could lose. They play Atlanta and Houston on the road. Then they get the Jets and the Eagles. The Eagles is going to be real hard without him to block. But the Jets is a winnable game. The Falcons should be, but it's on the road, and without him, I don't know. But the Falcons don't have a very good pass rush, which we'll talk about in a minute. Then they're at Houston. So Tampa can manage that first few games without Wirfs, then they probably will be a playoff team. But if not, you never do know. But let's start with Atlanta. Posted win total 7.5 for the Falcons, 80-1 to win the Super Bowl, 35-1 to win the NFC, and plus 250 to win the NFC South. Michael Penix Jr. was a fan of him in college, was a fan of him last year, even though I was a fade of the Falcons. I don't love this team at all. I went through their schedule. I thought 5 or 6 wins seemed to be realistic. I'm not a deep Bijan Robinson guy. I'm not a Drake London guy. Darnell Mooney, the other wide receiver, they're okay. I think their offense will be all right. They have no pass rush again. They forced no turnovers last year. Will that even change? I don't see it changing, and I don't love Raheem Morris as a head coach, so I'm going under 7.5 here. I think the front end of their schedule really, really hard. They're at Minnesota, at Carolina, bye week. At their home against Tampa, at Minnesota, at Carolina, Washington, then bye week. They could be 0-4, then Buffalo, then at San Francisco. They could legitimately be 0-6 before they play the Dolphins. So I can't buy into this Falcon team. I think they'll get buried early and not be able to get over 7.5. So we're going under there for the Atlanta Falcons. Our next team, a team we were very high on last year, we actually gave them out to win the division. It didn't turn out that way, but towards the end of the season, they were playing pretty good football, and that is the Carolina Panthers, Dave Canales. I think Dave Canales might be the best coach in this division. Todd Bowles isn't, and I know Raheem Morris isn't, and I know that, who's the other one? Who's the other coach in this division? Oh, Kellen Moore. Yeah, I don't believe in him at all. But Bryce Young improved a bunch. People panicked on him. Does he have enough around him on offense to get McMillan, the nice new young receiver? They got Xavier Leggett, who I'm very high on, and they got Chuba Hubbard. I think their offense is pretty decent. I like this team. Posted win total 6.5, 120-1 to win the Super Bowl, 50-1 to win the NFC. I have them winning this division this year once again at 4-1. We might have been a year early on them, but I think they turn it around. They added some sacks, some pass rushers in free agency, Patrick Jones and Tershawn Horton. So I think this team's going to be a lot better. I'm going over 6.5 wins. I'm taking them to win the division. I'm going with Bryce Young to throw over 17 touchdowns, and I'm going with Xavier Leggett to be over 575 yards receiving. I think that's an easily gettable goal for him, even with McMillan. Leggett had almost 500 last year in his rookie season. So I'm on Carolina all the way around. Moving on to the New Orleans Saints. This is going to be a really bad team. Are they tanking for Arch? I don't know. It might not matter. Kellen Moore takes over. I'm not enamored with him. 5.5 is the win total. 300-1 to win the Super Bowl. 120-1 to win the NFC. 12-1 to win this division. I went through their schedule. I can only find 3 wins, probably. The Giants at home, maybe the Falcons at home, middle of the year, and then the Jets at home. Everything else, to me, they're an underdog in and are really going to struggle. Arizona, San Francisco, Seattle, Buffalo to start the year. They're going to be 0-4 most likely. So tough spot here. I have no faith in this team. I don't like their roster. Alvin Kamara's getting old. I have no idea who their quarterback's going to be. Brandon Staley's their defensive coordinator. Hopefully he's better than what he was as a head coach. Honey Badger's gone. He retired a few weeks ago. Nothing to like about the New Orleans Saints at all. And then finally, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. 9.5 is the win total. 28-1 to win the Super Bowl. 13-1 to win the NFC. -110 to win this division. I can't play that number. With Wirfs being out, like I said, they could get behind the eight ball here and struggle. I don't think their schedule's easy. As I mentioned, Atlanta and Houston on the road to start it out. Then they get the Jets at home, which they'll win. Philadelphia at home. That's not going to be an easy game. Then they go to Seattle, Frisco, at Detroit. New Orleans will be a win. Then they're home against New England, at Buffalo, at the Rams, Arizona. So that's a tough stretch. Then they get it, New Orleans again. They can beat them. Atlanta at home. They should be able to win that. Then they're at Carolina, at Miami, which will be a win. And then Carolina again. So Carolina, two of the last 3 weeks. That could be for the division right there. And that's why I like Carolina. I think Carolina has a much better shot to be out ahead with a better schedule on the front end. Injuries to Godwin and Wirfs. When will Godwin be back? I don't know. It's hard to go against Mike Evans and Baker Mayfield. But if Mayfield's getting beat into the ground because his left tackle wasn't there, could be a problem. The defense was pretty decent. That Tyke Smith is pretty good. He was one of the top defensive rookies, and they get Haason Reddick. What will he be like? I think Tampa's a playoff team. I do, and I think for the first time in a while, you might have two playoff teams out of this division, which is pretty remarkable. But I don't think of the eight teams that we've talked about today, I don't think that any of these teams can win the Super Bowl. Tampa would really have to have a lot of things go right for them. Their roster close to being there, but not quite. And I can't trust Todd Bowles. So I just don't think any of these eight teams we talk about have any prayer of making deep postseason runs. Not that they can't get there, but I just don't see any Super Bowl bets here with any of these teams. No real play for me on Tampa in the NFC South. I'll be sitting at, I think they're right around that win total of 9. With worse being out, I can't bet them to win a division or to go over. So we're under on the Falcons at 7.5. We are under on the Saints at 5.5. We are over on Carolina at 6.5. And we're taking Carolina to win the NFC South at 4-1. We'll also take Xavier Leggett over 575 yards receiving and Bryce Young over 17 touchdowns for our plays in the NFC South. Well, I hope you enjoyed the football talk here on Bettors Last Hand, show number 137. We'll talk plenty more football across the Pine Room and Watchdog platform. So tune in, watchdognetwork.com, Pine Room Studios. That's where you want to be. Come football season, we'll be talking high school, college, and pro each and every week. So tune in to the Watchdog Network. Tune in to Pine Room Studios. Visit us at BLS_PRP on X and get our plays. I'll put my futures up each and every week after each show, as well as our weekly play. So tune in there or bookmark us, save the page, whatever you want to do. I don't think bookmarks are a thing anymore. That's old technology. But have us, follow us, whatever you want to do. Get the alerts on your phone. We'll be happy to have you in the Bettors Last Stand Army as we roll on to our final show of July. We'll be in August next week. Hard to believe. So we'll talk MLB, preview a few more football conferences. Let's see. Next week we have coming up, we'll talk the SEC in college football, and then we'll preview the AFC and NFC West right here on Bettors Last Stand. It'll be show number 138 coming to you next week. Hopefully it's a little cooler around Wheeling. Until then, enjoy your weekend. Best of luck in your wagering. And thank you for listening to the Watchdog Network. We'll see you next week.